Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you had a great sports weekend. Hope you wished your mother and the mother of your children a happy Mother's Day. And more than anything, get ready for a great week in sports. Western, Eastern, Conference playoffs about to get underway, and oh yeah, PGA Championship Week. You're like, what? Yeah, remember they switched the dates. Totally forgot. Quick aside on that in 1 second. The Doug Gottlieb Show brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, da,
bum, 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 bum. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, have you ever done this? Where you forget which is it, set my clocks ahead or set my clocks back, and you screw it up, and you wake up, and you're doing things, and it's completely the wrong hour? I remember distinctly when I was a kid, we used to have to go to Sunday school, and my parents took us an hour early to Sunday school. We just got screwed up in terms of the time, and I don't know why. It was fall back, and we rushed there, and there was nobody there. Then we went at what would have been the appropriate time, but even that was an hour earlier. Then we went at that's what it feels like with the PGA Championship. I do this for a living, and I was like, man, why do they keep talking about Bethpage Black and the PGA? Oh, it's this week. They moved it up. Anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later on in the week. We got a little bit of football for you. Interesting news in both college basketball and the NBA with John Beilein leaving Michigan to head to coach the Cleveland Cavaliers. Did not see that one coming. And, of course, we have the Friday night game, which apparently took place too long ago for us to lead with, which is Warriors upset the Houston Rockets. My parting words for you on Friday was that the Warriors would advance. I did not think they would win on Friday. I did think they would find a way to win one of the two games. What an incredible win, and the way in which they won, we'll get to. But let's go to what we saw yesterday. Kawhi Leonard gets the ball. Everyone knows he's getting the ball. Everyone knows he's shooting the ball. And though he left it short, didn't leave it as short as his free throw, and he makes a game-winning shot. Now, I've seen a lot of basketball in my life. A lot. And I've seen a lot of buzzer beaters in my life. A lot. I can't recall for the life of me a buzzer beater where with a leather basketball, in college basketball and high school basketball, they use these synthetic balls, and sometimes you get some odd bounces. I cannot recall one where the ball hits the front rim twice, caroms to the back rim twice, then up and finds a way into the goal. I've never seen that before in that situation. But that's exactly what happened. And Kawhi Leonard ends up putting up, what, he put up 41 points? That was his 41st point? Simply amazing. Now, he did a little bit of the Tebow thing, right? Where by missing a free throw, he started a fire that he then put out. But he had been putting out extinguishing the fire all afternoon long. And it's just interesting to me on what appeals to us in the media and what appeals to fans. And I'm not going to doubt or deny the way in which he handled everything in San Antonio left many people with a bad taste in their mouth. What was the deal? I mean, basically it was he felt like he was not cared for properly, and they thought he was. They thought he was ready. This was almost like an old Western movie. Right? What every old Western movie I've ever watched, and Gunsmoke, who apparently a lot of you people do watch, it always starts, there's always a fight when somebody calls the other one a liar. You called me a liar, right? And that's what the San Antonio Spurs said to Kawhi Leonard. We think you're healthy enough to go. And he said, you calling me a liar. and it became a shootout or a standoff at the OK Corral, and Kawhi ended up for at least a year in Toronto. But I don't know whether you want to compare him to Trout, as I did last week, or to Andrew Luck. But somehow we've gotten away from the idea of it's an okay thing to just be about your craft. It's an okay thing to be, like, we've made fun of Andrew Luck for years with having a flip phone when he was in college and not being a guy who's on social media. Aaron Rodgers won all the swag points yesterday because he had a cameo in Game of Thrones. Andrew Luck hasn't, I don't even know, like, we make fun of Andrew Luck's beard because you got Captain Andrew Luck on Twitter. And I love Aaron Rodgers, and I think to this point he's been the better quarterback. But I will tell you, there's something to the way an Andrew Luck just goes about his job doing his job. Right, the first couple years in the league, we wonder why he didn't have endorsements. He had 33 wins in the first 3 years with a terrible aging roster. And now once he gets back healthy and they get him an offensive line, look what happened to the Indianapolis Colts. Now, Kawhi Leonard plays 9 games last year, and people say he's all kinds of different things. They manage his load this year and rest him at sometimes inopportune times, and it pays them dividends with one fadeaway jump shot. Like, I don't know if it's Trout, if it's Luck, if it's Kawhi, or if they're all kind of some similar, you know what? They're good guys. They're good human beings. They have no personal baggage off the floor. These aren't guys that have been rumored to be in the club, not guys to have any sort of issues with women. And yet when the lights are on, the popcorn's popping, you seem to be able to depend on them to play at or above their optimum level time and again. I guess Trout would be the only guy you can't, because he's only been in 3 postseason games and he didn't hit well in those 3 postseason games, but such a small sample size. Kawhi does in fact speak. Here's his voice recorded. Swear to God he speaks after the game.
I'm a guy that acts like I've been there before. So probably last time you probably see me scream is like when we won. So whenever it's like a moment where I haven't really experienced, I probably try to give some emotion, show some emotion, and let it just come out. So, you know, tonight was one of those nights. I've never been in that situation before. And like you said, it's the first shot somebody hit a game winner in game 7. So I just showed emotion.
I mean, he even has to explain why he's showing emotion. I know I'm not supposed to. It's like a robot. I know I'm not supposed to. Johnny Five is alive. I'm not supposed to show emotion, but I did show emotion. Like, dude, you don't got to explain it. I was watching the game on my couch with my son. My mom was there. My wife was there. My wife's like looking down at her phone at the time. We jump up and go, oh my God. Oh my God. And it wasn't even that he made the shot. It was that he shot the ball and then it hits the rim. You're like, okay, miss. Wait, no. Oh my God! And then my wife looks up. What? What happened? I can't believe you're not watching. But what are the things that we always want our athletes to do? We want them to get better, right? Work at their craft. Here's a guy who's a center in high school that has slowly and progressively become a dynamic perimeter player. We want them to play both ends. He does. We want them to play well in championships. He does. We want them to act like they've been there before. He does. When do we get to the point to where you have to be so, you know, involved in social media and have a bunch of commercials and wear these dumb clothes before the game for 30 seconds that apparently they don't even pick out themselves? Like, when do we get to that point where that is worthy of discussion? But instead, he just made a play in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals and made it in a way in which I've never seen happen before. So you want to give me Luck? I'll take Luck. I'll take Trout. I'll take Kawhi. I'll take guys that they don't have to talk the talk. They just walk the walk. Pretty amazing. I mean, even he said after the game, hey, you know, I left the free throw short. I tried not leave that short. And he did, in fact, leave it short, but he had to shoot it over Joel Embiid. Like, we've gotten to the place where we're having to explain and sympathize with Joel Embiid for crying. Like, why is it okay for Joel Embiid to cry? Like, 23 years old, playing his guts. Is he in great shape? No, he needs to be in better shape. But that's not even the point. That dude's unbelievable. He's an unbelievable player. And he's still learning what he can do and how he can do it. And he did everything he could defensively to guard Kawhi Leonard without fouling him. And Kawhi just made a great shot. Good defense, better offense. Tip your cap. Yeah, you're allowed to cry. It's okay. It means it meant something to you. And you're allowed to show emotion, Kawhi. You don't have to apologize to us. We were all showing emotion.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm going to play for you three consecutive sound bites. I'll talk a little bit in between them, but here's Klay Thompson after the game.
Like Steve Kerr said, we didn't have the ultimate luxury tonight, a man who can just go out there and get you 40 on a win. So we had to play a little more diligent with the ball. We had to be more crisp with our passes. We couldn't, and the room for error was a lot less compared to when Kevin's out there. I'm happy we won so we can get some rest and get him healthy, because if we're going to get this three-peat, we desperately need him back. You know, he's our best player, so we dearly miss him, and we'll hold it down while he's out, but it's not the same without him. Far from it.
That's Klay Thompson, Mr. Game 6. Mr. Everyone thinks Klay wants respect. Klay wants to be the man. Klay wants to be paid. Here's Steph Curry.
Steph, closeout games are always the hardest, and you didn't have your guy Kevin Durant tonight. How were you guys able to close him out?
I don't know. We stay composed. We've been here before, won big games, done it on the road. We miss our guy and know he's going to be back. But we had to have his back. We talked about it all the time. This whole playoff run, he's been the best player in the league. And he's carried us. So the least we could do is have his back tonight, move on to the next round, and give ourselves a chance to be at full strength the rest of the way.
Here's Draymond Green.
We're getting back now.
Yeah, we're going to get him back now. In this world in which we operate under this assumption that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, like, yeah, see, we're still awesome. We don't need him. They said the opposite. And then it also brought up, and I saw Kevin Durant, or the IG of KD, celebrating when they won Game 6. At some point, is somebody going to grab him and go, hey, dude, I don't know if you realize this. Let's assume they win another NBA title. I don't know if you realize this, but Michael Jordan never won 4 in a row, and you very well could. Matter of fact, no one's ever won 4 in a row since the Boston Celtics did. And while you'd never catch the Celtics, why couldn't you catch the Bulls? Why couldn't you pass the Bulls? Like, I get it. Sometimes it gets old, and it gets sluggish, and it becomes the same thing, and we'll try and kind of figure that thing out. But what would be more memorable? Being the guy who tried to save the New York Knicks and maybe accomplishes it? Or being the guy who leads the Golden State Warriors 2-4, 5-6? Remember when LeBron was like, not one, not two, not three, not four? Remember that? That could be the Warriors. And you have a bunch of guys who, in the one moment where they could take a victory lap and go, see, we're still awesome. They said, that was fun, but we need 35 back because he's our best player. Two things I have never seen before in the NBA. That, and then Kawhi Leonard's fall away jump shot, hit the front rim twice, hit the back rim twice, and then go in. I think it speaks to the Warriors as men. It speaks to the culture of the program, of the Warriors. And I think it should be a signal to Kevin Durant. Hey, dude, you're going to be the best player wherever you go. But we already respect you. We already love you. Yeah, we can win till you're healthy, but we know we can't do this without you. And if you're the Rockets, you're just sitting there like the Raptors, right? Hopeful that thing implodes. But there's this sense like, well, you know, he had to go to a super team. What do you think the Knicks would be if he goes there with Kyrie Irving and say they drafted Zion Williamson, right? Like there's a, oh, well, LeBron didn't go to a super team in Miami. The hell he didn't. They got Chris Bosh. That Dwayne Wade was already there, had been in finals MVP. And oh, yeah, by the way, a year later, they get Ray Allen. You know, this is a magnificent team with two magnificent players and kind of the ultimate gritty glue guy player in a Draymond Green. And look, they have issues. I don't know how much longer Iguodala can do it. Livingston seems to be on his last legs. They haven't found that kind of next generation off the bench. There's still stuff to work through. But you mean to tell me it's not fun winning? It's not fun being so well-respected that in the very moment where they should celebrate their own greatness, they're openly saying, hey, that was fine, but we need the other fella back because he actually makes everything so much better. They basically called Kevin Durant peanut butter. Right? Because peanut butter makes everything better.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Frank Vogel's new head coach of the Lakers, and I'm not really sure it matters all that much, right? I'm not saying that it doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter that much. Okay? Process was a mess. This is a lot like UCLA and their process in finding Mick Cronin, who I think is a damn good coach. Is it a sexy hire? Like, no, but Mick Cronin can coach. He can win 30 games since then. He can win 30 games at UCLA. Now, I mean, had it not been for the LeBron James-led Cleveland Cavaliers, Frank Vogel would have coached in the NBA Finals with the Indiana Pacers. Like, he's a good enough coach. What's not good enough is the personnel. And if that doesn't get solved, it doesn't matter who the coach is. Like, I thought Luke did a good job, but they didn't have good enough shot makers, and they didn't play good enough defense, and they couldn't get it done. It's that simple. Again, not the end-all, be-all, but do you mean to tell me that he couldn't get them to the NBA playoffs, that they're incapable of getting to the NBA? It all depends on his personnel. I'm like, look, I know you're told that Jason Kidd mentored Lonzo Ball last year. If mentoring him is placing one phone call to help encourage him, is mentoring him, then okay. But Lonzo Ball hasn't been great because he hasn't had time in an offseason. He has never been healthy for an offseason. Not once. Now he'll have a chance to refine his game and improve his standing, and it looks like there's a buy-in as of now from LeBron. They go out, they add another player. If they fix the roster, got to have more shooting. Got to have more shooting, less clowns, and the young guys got to get better. If they do that, they'll make the playoffs. If they don't, they won't. I mean, they'll probably make the playoffs regardless, but they got a chance to go deep in the playoffs. And if you think that coaching LeBron is so difficult, and I don't think it's easy. But Tyronn Lue had 0 years of head coaching experience and took them to 3 straight NBA finals. Eric Spoelstra had never been to it. Had he been to an NBA finals? Like, no. Not before LeBron got there. So here's a guy who has been there, has seen that, has done that, and has some level of respect around the NBA. And everybody thinks, good coach, good guy. No, nobody's going to sit there and go like, he stinks. But to everybody freaking out about the process was a mess. Doesn't mean they got a bad coach. And even if they did get a better coach or a bigger name coach or a sexier name coach, it wouldn't matter if they don't fix the personnel. Yes, John Ramos.
I agree. The personnel needs to be fixed. But does Ty Lue make it better to get that personnel than maybe Frank Vogel does?
I don't think so. Actually.
Okay,
I don't because the MO. Of LeBron is he wants LeBron's guys. And Vogel is not a LeBron guy. He's not an anti-LeBron guy. He's just a guy. And this helps the Lakers in their establishment of, hey, man, we just want a good coach. We just want good players to go around who we think is the best player still in the game in LeBron James to make a playoff run. I actually think it helps. I think it hurts in perception. It hurts in the fact that they wanted Ty Lue. I'd also say this about Ty Lue. How much money is Tyronn Lue making today? How much is he making? I mean, I'm sure he's getting something from Cleveland or whatever, but how much is he actually making in salary? Not a penny. So, did he want Jason Kidd as his assistant? Probably not. Did he want Kurt Rambis as his assistant? Probably not. Did he want 5 years instead of three? Probably did. But this is like when you walk into a car dealership and you're like, I'm not paying a penny over $20,000 for that car. They're like, sir, the least we can give it to you for is $22,500. I'm not paying a penny over 20. I know how this works. You got to hold back. You got this. You got that. $20,000. Like, sir, the price that we're willing to pay you, offer you is $22,500. You say no. All right. You walk out that door thinking they're going to chase you down, and he walked out, and the Lakers said, okay, we'll find somebody who will coach LeBron, who will take a 3-year deal. Frank Vogel went from making zero to $6 million. Tyronn Lue went from making zero to zero. It's okay if you think you have leverage, but everyone is replaceable. And I don't know how many wins they lost, how much respect they lost, if there's any players they lost, credibility they lost. We'll just have to wait and see. And I'm not somebody, do I think the Lakers handled it well? No, but they also hold the cards because it was their job to hire. And they chose to pass.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Jim Jackson joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I'm all for analytics, but I also like kind of a hybrid approach where you use it some and you still value, hey, get a guy a ball in his spot where he feels super comfortable and the rest of the team can relax. Isn't that kind of what the playoffs have told us?
Well, I mean, yeah, because if you think about with the Portland game, it was C.J. McCollum down the stretch of the game. They weren't three-point shots, Doug, as you know. He got to a spot on the court where those to the free-throw line extended, to the free-throw line, or he got to the basket. And while the other team missed, like Golden State, you miss. Okay, we may not get a three, but we'll get 6-8 points of two-point basket. And that's the difference. And that's how you win basketball games in a tough, you know, fourth quarter when the defense is tight. And, you know, the offense needs to figure out ways to manufacture some easy baskets.
Doug Gottlieb Show with Jim Jackson, Jim Jackson's young son in the background, also adding his own commentary to this. Is he agreeing with you or disagreeing with you?
Oh, he's not. Oh, he's in the back right now. Like he's on his own thing right now.
He's on his own thing right now. He's on the eye nanny. Okay.
Exactly.
Have you ever seen a ball hit the front rim twice, back rim twice, and then go in?
Yeah, I have, but not in that situation, that degree of difficulty. Think about that shot now. As a right-handed player, going to your right, you have to basically turn and square your whole body and shoulders to get it, especially at that angle in the corner. It's much easier going to his left to shoot that. So the degree of difficulty was just... And at the angle, when we were watching the game, I said, there's no way that's going in. You know, and it went in, but, I mean, it capped off, I think, what was a great series for Toronto, tough one for Philly, but never seen it like that in a clutch situation.
What do you think happens in Philadelphia? Or what should happen in Philadelphia?
They got to evaluate a couple of things. One, I think you need to demand with Joel Embiid that he comes in better shape from the beginning of the season. I think he's carrying a little bit too much weight, hence it adds to some injuries. His eating habits have to change because he's so dominant when he's in there. I don't think he's completely committed to being in the best shape. When he can do that, I think it takes his game to another level. You got to figure out what you want to do with Ben Simmons. And what I mean by that, in late game situations, he clogged up the lane because they put him on the post. They took the ball out of his hands, which partly was due to the fact that he wasn't producing from the outside. And, Dougie, what I tell people all the time is, you know, they compare him to Magic Johnson, but Magic Johnson played point guard in high school. He played it in college. So So he was natural at that position. Ben is not a natural point guard. And that comes out into play, especially in playoff situations. You got to figure out what you do if you want to pay Jimmy Butler. But also, you can't afford, I don't think, to lose Tobias Harris or J.J. Redick. You can't pay J.J. like that. But so they have some critical decisions they got to make this offseason.
Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. That's Jimmy Jackson, who's joining us. All right, let's get to the West. I mean, we saw an absolute virtuoso by Steph down the stretch. And, of course, Game 6, Clay showed up. What took me was, afterwards, to a man, they were all like, that was great, but we need KD back. Was this recruiting, or do you think that's just the makeup of those guys that they truly, in fact, respect Kevin Durant and want him back? Because so many other people are like, well, this just shows how much better, how good they are without Kevin Durant. Why do you think they reacted the way they did?
Because it's a genuine respect for what KD brings to the table. And keep in mind, Doug, this is one game. It's a lot different when you got to play a seven-game series without Kevin Durant. So they basically played a game and a half because when KD went out, now you come back. But that stresses the bench out a lot more on what you can and can't do, your rotations. If you don't have Kevin Durant, he's an excellent rebounder. His defense has improved. He can make plays to his teammates, and of course he can score. So, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you're going to need Kevin Durant. I think maybe not so much against Portland, but if you end up playing against Milwaukee, who I think could beat Toronto, you're definitely going to need Kevin Durant because Milwaukee has home court advantage, okay? And you need somebody that can go get baskets just like that in tough situations.
What do you do if you're Houston?
Bro, I mean, I think they got to find the balance, man. You talked about it, Doug, about the analytics part of it. They built their team so much to go out and defeat Golden State from a physical perspective. But what they didn't improve was the mental part, Doug. I mean, I played for Mike D'Antoni. I love him to death. But how do you not make adjustments during it? I always said that I thought that even with Kevin Durant out, that Golden State would win in seven back at home. And the X factor was that Clay and Steph would figure it out. You have to guard them differently. But key is who was on the bench, who was in the pilot seat. And that's Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr made the adjustment with that 1-4 pick and roll with Steph and Draymond. Mm-hmm. They cleared out the strong side corner, and they allowed Draymond to make plays. You hit a 3-on-2 on the backside. Mike D'Antoni and Houston never made the adjustment. Okay, after the first time, okay. Second time, third time, you got to make an adjustment. Pre-rotate, do something. That's the difference. And with Houston, now you tried everything in regards to building the team. You got to figure out how you want to play. Chris Paul's going to be a year older, okay? Can you win with James Harden dominating the ball? Works in the regular season, but not in the postseason to ultimately get to a championship game.
I agree with you in terms of, now, in fairness, they did something different every time down. Like, right? One time they came off and faked the screen, he lays it in. One time he throws it back, gets a handoff, hits a three. One time he comes off and goes back the other way and hits a crazy three. Another time he hits Draymond and he passes it to Iguodala to Klay. Like, it wasn't like it was the same. It was the same set, but they used every different option from it.
Well, but here's the thing, though, because they jumped Draymond. I mean, they jumped Klay each time. Okay, that one time when Chris Paul turned his head, it's because he jumped out. Okay, Steph went away from it, but also because the post player kind of stepped out, it gave enough room. So, yeah, there were different options off of it, but how Houston chose to guard it is what I'm talking about. You have to change that look up a little bit. Even if you come back to it, you have to change it up to make the offense uncomfortable. If not, Steph and Draymond knew exactly what – what they want to do. Doug, you played enough to know with a teammate, you can give a little signal, little eye contact. Okay, instead of me coming off, I'm gonna fade to the corner. This time set the screen and now you slip early. You know, you can communicate without really saying it, and that's what I'm saying. They were so comfortable that they can pretty much do what they wanted in that side of the court on that play.
KD's not gonna play game one. Does Portland have enough to win this series?
I don't know if they have enough shot makers. I mean, CJ McCollum and Damon are just, bro, I mean, and I love their business approach to the playoffs this year. Their demeanor after what happened last year. I've grown to really respect more and more those guys. Can Evan Turner step up? Can Hartless be a guy you can, against Golden State, you can count on for six games, seven games? That's the question with this Portland team. And plus, actually, it works better for Golden State because Portland wants to get up and down the court more so than less than what Denver want to do half court-wise. So I think it plays into the mindset in the game of what Golden State wants to do. But it could be a 4-2 series, depending on what happens with KD.
Milwaukee and Toronto. Obviously, everyone's going to point out Kawhi versus KD versus Giannis. But as we've seen, you know, usually stars end up crossing each other out. Who then becomes the X factors?
Well, for both teams, you know, Keith Middleton. Well, Middleton has always been, you know, the second best player there, production wise, for Milwaukee, and then, you know, Pascal Siakam. He didn't play well the last series. Can he kind of go back to what we saw that first season? I mean, the first playoff series, and also what we saw during the course of the year. Because you're right, Doug. I mean, Giannis is going to get his. Kawhi is going to get his. Who else is going to be able? I think Eric Bledsoe is going to be a key factor. I mean, is it now for Kyle Lowry in the Eastern Conference Finals to be more consistent in what he does? It's always those role players. I think Malcolm Brogdon coming back, defensively, offensively, leadership, what he does. Those are the guys I think that are going to play a key role. And as you know, Doug, can Toronto muster up enough of the savvy to go into Milwaukee and get a game? Is going to be the key.
Yeah, it is. What do you think of what the Lakers have done with Frank Vogel?
Here's my thing, Doug. I didn't like what they did to Ty Lue by offering him a 3-year deal, which is the last 3 years of LeBron's tenure, of course, unless he chooses to do something else. I didn't like how they tried to dictate who was going to be on the coaching staff, okay? But yet instead you come back and you give Vogel this. Now, I'm trying to get my arms wrapped around what direction the Lakers want to go. And it's been off kilter ever since, you know, Dr. Jerry Buss passed away. Everything they've done, it seemed to go opposite of what he put in place for that franchise. It's almost like, you know, the rich kid, the father, I want to do something totally different. And that's what we see. And as a result, the Lakers have not been, you know, formidable powerhouse that we saw in the past, man. I'm a little confused with the power struggle, but a lot of it with Pelinka is the power struggle within it, man. You know, and Pelinka has his own issues from being a former agent that a lot of people didn't really have a good feel for. Now he's the general manager, which plays a role as well.
Does it ultimately work anyway?
Doug, I would love to say it. You know, you're in Lakerland. It's a lot easier to turn the Lakers around than it is, you know, some other teams that are may have a little discomfort going on. But it leadership, as you know, is consistent leadership, the consistent word, the consistent message. When you don't have that, talent is one thing, but the trickle-down effect of your management upstairs is not as joined in and not as concise and consistent is going to end up affecting your product, and that's what we've seen with the Lakers, man.
Okay, John Beilein leaves Michigan to coach in the NBA. He nearly left Michigan last year. Now he does it. You obviously played in the Big Ten, covered Beilein a bunch, covering the Big Ten. Yeah. Everybody raves about him as a human being and as a basketball coach, but how does it work in the NBA?
Well, and you know, in college, you're the parental figure. You can basically run and control what you want with these young men in college, okay? You're the first and last word. If something happens, college coaches can get rid of you. They can do – that's not what happens in the league. And I'm just trying to figure out the direction. And, you know, the whole thing about Cleveland Cavs is like we want to establish a culture, a new culture, okay? I tend to think that could be done with a younger coach that understands the culture of the guys there, not that Beilein doesn't. I think it's a tough ask at 66 years old as your first NBA job to come in. But what they love about Beilein was his discipline, his ability to communicate with young men, his ability to, I think, improve upon the mental aspects of the game. But again, these are 18, 19, 20-year-olds when you come into college. So a lot different when you come into the pro. So it's interesting to me. I love John Beilein. I just don't know if that was the right move for the future. Is it, you know, I just don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a really, really weird one.
What did you, when you first saw it, what did you think?
I didn't think, I honestly thought the Lakers would consider Krzyzewski, Izzo, Self, Beilein, right? The only part, the part about the Beilein thing that I do like, play-wise, he's always been a guy that's opened up the floor, and that's the, obviously yep. the way of the future in the NBA. His from Kevin Pitsnoggle on down, he's, you know, Mo Wagner letting his big guy shoot and creating mismatches with his offense, and he has changed some recently as well. He's gone away from his old structure. But the other part is, yes, he's a disciplined guy, but he also doesn't browbeat you, right? Like the reason the classic college coach wouldn't work was they would MF you up and down, and they would, you know, knock you down, then build you back up. That's not, he's discipline oriented, but he's not the classic disciplinarian that has to curse you and make you feel lower than a human being. And it is a young team, but it's definitely an odd high. It's not one that I thought I saw coming with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, it just goes back to relationships too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, his relationship with the front office allowed him to be able to take a look at it. And you can't be mad at John Beilein. Look, 66 years old, he's pretty much done everything at Michigan except win a championship. This is a chance for him, the backside of his career, to maybe do something he always wanted to do, which is throw his hat in the ring,
sure.
seriously about, you know, coaching in the NBA. And what does he have to lose? If they approached him about it, what does John have to lose? He had a bigger payday, okay? We all know in the NBA things can turn, you know, next year. But he said he can always go back to college if he wants to. So, I mean, for him, it's a great lateral move. I'm just thinking for the Cavs and what they're trying to do, does it make sense right now?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will definitely see. Great stuff, man. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the playoffs and your little man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Doug. You appreciate it, brother.